Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the entertainment industry. My guest today is indeed a musician, but that's only merely one hat that this man wears. Charlie Boswell is the director of digital media for chipmaker AMD. That's a pretty high-level title for the man that acts as the liaison, shall we say, between the world of technology and the world of Hollywood. Charlie, welcome.
Hello, Simon. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing just great. And you?
I'm well.
Good. We were rapping on the phone a couple of days back, and we were comparing computer war stories. We're of similar age, and I think we've been around the computer industry for about the same period of time. And it actually made me start reminiscing. I remember the introduction of the IBM PC back in 1981. And boy, things have changed a lot in the last 30 years. Today's PCs are not glorified typewriters. They're true multimedia centers. Music, video, TV, games. Those are just a few of the things that you can do with the magic box these days. I'm just a casual observer, but it seems to me that over recent years that this has become a very prominent strength with your company, AMD. You seem to really, really be pushing the multimedia side.
No, absolutely. Even 10 years ago, we began to evangelize our technology to the high-end content creator as we began to architect our 64-bit machines. And, it's never really, for us, it's been about a user experience, trying to enhance whether you're creating the content or experiencing the content. And you can't do that, from the sidelines. And so we had to engage, at a subject matter level with these high-end content creators. But you're absolutely right. You know, the computer has found its way into that sort of, I like to call it, that rarefied atmosphere where somebody actually sits down to create something. You know, I don't think anybody, certainly on my team, is really satisfied with where we're at today in terms of how this thing, pays respect for the human mind as we create content. You know, it's got to be fast. It's got to be seamless. I think we've made great strides, but I think we've got, some way to go here. But anyway, we're, very excited about the opportunity to be engaged on the content, because that's what's really moving these machines out of the store. People want to produce themselves. People want to, chronicle their lives, whatever. And everybody's becoming a content creator. And it's been kind of a great payoff for us to have engaged at the highest level and to find almost, a really strange similarity between both camps, whether it's George Lucas or Robert Rodriguez, or the average content creator. All just want to utilize the technology. They don't want to worship the technology. They don't want to tend and play with the technology. They really want to be focused on the task, which in this case is content. So, making sure that experience is great for, either Robert or George or whomever. And then when you ingest that media, or when you bring that media into your home, and we want to make sure that on AMD that this experience is very much like the way the guys created it. So that's our goal, and that's what we've been up to.
How do you go about deciding the best approach for the user? Do you go out and engage the user and kind of talk to them about what it is they would like to see. You know,
oh, absolutely. We work with both camps. You know, whether it's the users on the high end or the person that's just enjoying the media. You know, we work with them. Different systems, different test groups, different evaluation teams do that. I can only speak for what I do in terms of what my team does on the high end content creation side. Is we, you know, we've never. I always like to describe us as what we're not. You know, we're not one of these gratuitous famous person groups where you sponsor some famous person in Hollywood and you pose for some great pictures and whatnot. It's never been about that for us. We bring in our technology and we help, whether in the workflow, and then we measure that, whether that's like effects or color timing or nonlinear video editing. We help that artist with our technology. We make sure that all the partners around us bring their solution so that the creator has a full solution. It's not just a patchwork quilt of disparate technologies, but it's an actual solution. So he can be about his task, and so we engage with them, and then all we do on the back end is we describe and tell the truth about what we've done, as measured by what comes out, whether it's a movie or a CD or whatever. That's the way we do it on the professional end.
Right. I mean, you know, it's one thing watching a video on your PC. It's another beast altogether, being involved in the creation aspect. Now, you were involved in the just-released box office hit Predators. What role did AMD play in that movie with Robert Rodriguez?
Well, it's another great look at Robert's work and what we did there. Again, he uses our technology on the pre-visualization side of things as well as on doing a lot of the final shots. In particular, on that movie, there's a scene where Mombasa, gets impaled on some spikes, and we did a lot of the simulations there. So, Robert was able to come in with his previs guys and really nail that shot, and they just went with that final shot. That's an interesting look. That particular movie, there's really not a lot of green screen or special effects replacements in that thing. So it's a great character-driven movie with just the right amount of effects. But our technology was used on the previs on the digital shot design part of that.
So, kind of, it sounds almost like a step between the storyboard and the shot. You're simulating the shot.
It's really a great look at how a director works. Robert likes to say the movie set is the mind, and I really like that because that shows where technology has to play, is in that rarefied atmosphere of his mind. So he comes in with an idea, communicates that to his artist. The artist sort of design almost like a game render quality sort of view of the way that camera angle is going to look, and he's able to do all of that animatics, which is what it's called, to be able to time the shots, to be able to get the shots that he wants before he ever steps on the set. And this is a great money-saving thing because, you got all the crew standing around, you wouldn't really want to nail it. But more importantly, it's an aesthetic thing because, Robert is the artist, and he has the vision in his mind, and we want to make sure that the technology respects that and works perfectly balanced with his artistic performance. And this is another view, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, about how we think that the normal user should work with technology. Really shouldn't have to, walk on eggshells around this stuff. You should be able to work at the speed of thought and in the moment. And that picture that I just gave you about Robert, the way he directs, that's how our technology approaches him, sort of, in a, making sure that he can get the aesthetic that he wants, but he's not making decisions based on only what the technology will allow, because I think that's really going 180 degrees in the wrong direction.
Okay, I'm fascinated. I didn't realize that you went through this process of simulation. Is this just at a wireframe level, or is this actual video game quality, if you will?
It's video game quality, and some of the shots when he's making these decisions are really, will have the live action full HD plate in the background, and so this is not some sort of proxy file that he's working from. He's working from, maybe the daily of Mombasa, when he is being hoisted up, and you have to see the film to know what I'm talking about. But the main point here is, Robert is a cartoonist. That's what that's one of his skill sets, and so he's used to taking a stylus and putting it on a piece of paper and then getting instant feedback. And so we want to make sure we carry that same spirit into his pre-visualization process. And so we will, on this particular film, we worked in a full HD format for him on the previs side. Now, some of the previs characters, in this case, the spikes that Mombasa gets impaled on, when he sees that, he sees how they're going to do. They're not fully rendered, but in a short order of time, he comes back and they're fully rendered, and then he makes the call, hey, that's what I want. That example is not necessarily an example of previs, but it's an example of the artist working with technology, making aesthetic decisions.
At some point, Predators, I'm sure, is going to come out on DVD or Blu-ray, and inevitably these days there are those extra features. I would love to see some of the preview stuff. I mean, it sounds just so so fascinating.
Well, it's again, it's you measure all of this stuff, all of the corporate talk and all of the technology talk on what comes out. You should measure it based on that. And so ultimately, it is measured. The success or failure is measured on what the final product is. And so I leave that, judgment to your audience. But I was very pleased with what, and I think the studio was too. And the numbers don't lie.
Yeah, I was looking online, I think it was yesterday or the day before, and it's what, clocked over $100 million in box office. And, that's not too shabby, because I believe the production budget was only $40 million.
Yeah, it actually paid for itself the first weekend out, and so the numbers guys, they're really down with that. So it's doing great numbers, and I think I think it's a return. It's interesting. In the Predators franchise, the one where Predator moves to the city, gets a girlfriend or whatever, it kind of lost its way, so I think Robert and Antal. Robert really brought it kind of back to where it's, back to the jungle, so to speak. So anyway, I thought it worked really well, and I thought it was a great balance of character and effect and effects. And so anyway, that was good. We were very happy with it.
And I have to ask you this question. It's a throwaway, but it's been nagging at me for actually months, probably years. Is there any truth in the rumor that every time Robert releases a movie, you buy him a new guitar?
That is the truth, and it's a very interesting look at the way we deal with the artist, as well as the end user, for that matter. We want everybody who works with our technology to use it as if it were as spontaneous as playing a musical instrument. Any nerdy, anything that takes you out of the moment is bad for us. We are the world leading manufacturer of high performance computer microprocessors and graphics. But we've taken it upon ourselves to make sure that the end user isn't left out of this equation. We want to see these boxes designed from the outside in, rather than from all this componentry out. And in the spirit of that, I make sure that I I give Robert a guitar because, one, he's a musician, I'm a guitar player, we kind of relate on that level. But the main thing is Robert uses technology as if it were a musical instrument. I mean, he'll walk around on stage, walk around on the set a lot of times with his guitar. It keeps his thoughts fluid and whatnot. And so that's the reason that we do that, that I do that.
Okay. I understand that there's another movie in the works, Machete. What can you tell us about Machete?
Well, it's incredible, number one. and I say that because I happen to be a fan of Robert's filmmaking, movie-making style. And I can say that, you know, this is total Robert. And, you know, it's got an interesting story because, you know, we worked with him on Grindhouse. That was he and Quentin Tarantino, dueling banjos, if you will, on the Grindhouse thing, which I absolutely loved. And Machete was one of the fake trailers that came out of that whole project. And Robert basically took that trailer, and because it was so well received, and reverse engineered the entire movie from that high concept on that trailer. I love that. And you know, this thing is peppered with an amazing cast. I encourage your listening audience to go to vivamachete.com to take a look at this thing. It will go worldwide on September the 3rd. And it's just absolutely, you know, it's great. It's a Fellini-esque cast of amazing characters. Everybody gave an amazing performance on this thing. My good friend Jeff Fahey, I think, is really a standout on this thing. And let your audience be the judge of that. But anyway, it's total Robert. It's full on. And it's absolutely got the most buzz that of anything we've ever worked with him on. So don't want to oversell it, but, you know, kind of did.
Okay, so September the 3rd.
Yeah, worldwide release.
All right.
Now, premiere in Austin on the 2nd.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And let me guess, you will be in attendance.
Yes, I will. I will.
I do hope you will... let me know how the premiere goes.
I will certainly do that, and maybe somebody out there in the press will ask to see the Machete guitar. You know, it's amazing.
Oh, I also hope you'll send me a picture of it.
Uh-huh. Happy to.
What have you been up to in the music world? I think the last time we spoke, you were involved in a project with Dweezil Zappa.
Absolutely. Dweezil and I shot this movie called Roxy for Dweezil in Los Angeles almost a year and a half ago. And we're just now wrapping it up. But it's an homage to Frank Zappa's Roxy and Elsewhere, the famous record from the 70s that was filmed at the very same venue, X years to the date. And so it was something that we worked on, shot in HD. And, the interesting inside story is Dweezil actually came to Austin, crashed at my studio for 3 weeks and did the full edit himself. And so this, when you see this movie, I directed it, Dweezil edited it, but it's a full-on Zappa production, you know, performance and editing. And we were pretty proud of that because, you know, it's another example of how we work with the artist. You know, whatever it takes to help that artist get what he needs, with our technology being, you know, being utilized, we're game. And that's another example of that.
When do you envisage that hitting the streets?
Well, I can't speak for Dweezil when he's going to release it, but I can tell you it's in post-production right now. And I'm doing the DVD design for it. I directed it, and I'm also doing the DVD layout and design. So I would guess, later this year or maybe in Q1 of next year.
Okay. Now, I think that there's also Spy Kids 4 somewhere in the mix?
Yes, there's another one of those. I really can't talk about what the studio has plans there, but I'm certain there's another one of those down the road at some point.
Well, it certainly sounds like you and your team keep pretty darn busy with this stuff.
No, absolutely. We did another musician. We did a Blu-ray DVD for Ted Nugent last year. It was his first Blu-ray title, and we're doing another one for him later this year. And we also did one for my good buddy Doyle Bramhall II, who is Eric Clapton's guitar player, and Charlie Sexton, also a great friend. And they have a band called the Archangels. And we helped shoot this video almost 4 years ago, and we finally got the DVD out just earlier this year. And so anyway, we're involved in both music and film. Any place our technology can make a difference, but we really stand shoulder to shoulder with the artists to try to help them get to where they need to go.
I think one of the reasons that you are successful at doing this is that you yourself are a musician. Are you doing any playing at all these days?
Yes, I will play. I'll play around town here in Austin occasionally, or dedicate some. Sit in with somebody or record with somebody. Right now, I am in terms of my artistic ventures, I'm working on my first feature, and so that is in pre-production at this point in time. Some of it's going to be shot later this summer here in Austin. So I will contribute music to that as well. But I'm co-directing that with another fellow from Los Angeles, and getting a lot of help from my famous buddies on this.
and you certainly do have a lot of famous buddies.
Well, they're just regular people, trying to do their thing, and so it's been a great opportunity, that AMD's afforded me to actually look at this whole world and to see, what's going on here. But it, more importantly, it's given me a chance to look at the way technology interacts with the human mind, and what the areas are for improvement, and how we need to really focus on that end user, not just the famous ones, but the people that buy their wares and that consume them. And anybody that sits down to a piece of technology with our company's name associated with it, we want to make sure that experience is top-notch. So this opportunity that I've been given to look at the way content is created is really going to help, I think, on the way content is consumed. And so that's why myself, began as a musician and became an engineer, and then have now circled completely back to where I mostly do music and movies. It's given me a chance to contribute something to this great change that I think is taking place in technology now, which is really exciting for me.
I've always wanted to ask you this question. As I understand it, and I got it from an unreliable online source, you actually went to school to study music and somehow crossed that line and moved into engineering. How did that come about?
Well, it's pretty simple. I don't want to bore the audience with this stuff, but it was my father was an engineer. He was a Marine, military dude. My mother's a piano player, and I guess I just kind of I'm kind of a hybrid in that sense. But I grew up in the inner city, in East St. Louis, until I was about the seventh grade, which, East St. Louis, it's an interesting place, and it's almost like a DMZ. Anyway, my mother moved us out of there up to where my grandfather was from, and I wound up going to school in a little town called Marceline, Missouri. And Marceline is known as, it's one claim to fame, it's the boyhood home of Walt Disney. And so I'd got involved in just trying to entertain myself, you know, doing movies and doing music just to have something to do. And shot a lot of 8mm, Super 8 when I was in high school and college, and then played in a lot of bands, that kind of thing. And so, but at some point in time, I don't know, either I got a hit in the head or you know, some blunt force trauma or something, and decided that, hey, I really need to go into engineering school. And I kind of had to reinvent myself. But anyway, I went through that whole thing. It's been an interesting ride. I've worked with a lot of different things, NASA, you know, different projects. And but I've enjoyed this last 15 years at AMD the very most because I've been able to sort of mix those two worlds, the technology and the creative. And in a weird sort of way, these have been the most fulfilling for me because I've been able to sort of work in the realms that I'm most comfortable, but also to try to help my colleagues and my company to really begin to focus on the end user. Anybody that, you know, we're at a point now where we want to move the emphasis from the technology to the task, and whatever that is, you know, whether it's productivity, whether it's creative or whatever. There's too much time spent dorking with this technology. Right. And if your audience would, you know, do a real honest evaluation, how much time do you spend tending to the technology versus, you know, actually doing the task? I think it's a pretty low percentage. But anyway, that brings up the cloud, and here we are.
Okay, I want to ask you a nerdy question. I know that you and I rarely talk nerd stuff, but I know some of our listeners are nerds. The modern computer has two engines in it. The something called the CPU that does the data crunching, and mm-hmm. something called the GPU that handles what you see on the screen. As I understand it, AMD are now working on joining those two engines together to basically take two four cylinders and create a eight cylinder monster. What's the advantage of joining those two elements together?
Well, in the simplest terms, the entire web or cloud, if you want to call it that, I like that term actually, is completely and utterly media centric. In other words, HTML and text searches, that occupies a certain percentage of the traffic, but people creating and consuming content or video or graphical content is really what's happening today. And, you know, combining the power of, you know, there's no simple answer to this, but combining the power of the CPU with the GPU and leveraging the graphics capability of the GPU to essentially tune in, if you will, to that cloud is really where the opportunity is. And I say that because, you know, a lot of talk about thin clients and whatnot, and certainly the cell phone is bearing that out, the popularity there. But there's a tremendous need for the evolution of the cloud to have the ability to have the CPU and GPU carry forward thousands of years of legacy software. And so these units are combined so that the CPU can leverage the existing software investment, which is, again, thousands upon thousands of man years of code and whatnot, and then the GPU to be able to accelerate media for that better end user experience, which is the future of the cloud. So I think that it's another great AMD story here about how we have laid our technology and our marketing right down that line as we move the cinematic and the interactive together over the web. And so that's a long answer for saying that the combined, or I think the term is gestalt, where, you know, the whole is more complex than the sum of its parts. This combination is really the linchpin for the evolution and the revolution that's going to happen in the cloud. So I'm particularly very excited about that, and going to be releasing an upcoming article on this whole thing.
And I do want to touch on that in a couple of moments. Okay, enough of playing nerds. Let's go back to our normal stance of not liking nerds. What is new in the world of global nerding?
Well, you know, global nerding is that sort of planetary trend where we find ourselves adapting to technology rather than saying, "Hey, wait a minute, I want technology to adapt to me." I think the biggest thing, the biggest boon to fighting global nerding is the cloud, and it's happening at a frantic pace. I mean, the cloud is nothing new, really. You know, people have been doing web hosting and web services for the past successfully and financially successfully the past 10, 15 years. But what's different now is that the client itself is becoming, you know, pulled into the cloud, and so. I would have to say what's happening, you know, what I'm most excited about is the whole cloud revolution. And again, because I believe, and I think I can explain this, that the cloud is going to help change the focus from technology to the task. And I think you see that with, you know, people, the popularity of the cell phone, you know, certainly different other thin devices that, you know, people are, you know, just naturally gravitating to. I don't think there's any sort of conscious effort for them to, but I think they are responding to the cloud, and the reason is they don't want to. I think they're tired of playing technology. I think the analogy I like to give here is, do you remember that cheesy science fiction film from the 50s called When Worlds Collide? You remember that,
yes,
Simon?
Indeed.
It was a film where, you know, these brilliant guys, you know, had discovered that this star and a planet were going to collide with the Earth, and so they got this massive effort to build a spaceship to get out to leave the planet. I think that the poor user experience in general is really driving us to the cloud, and in fact, I think we're fleeing to the cloud. Just like in that sort of low budget movie. So the main point is the cloud is happening, and it's happening for a reason, and that I believe is what I'm most excited about in terms of what I think it's going to deliver in terms of balancing technology with that user experience.
I'm going to try and give a description of the cloud to our listeners, because although you and I claim we're not nerds, in some respects we are nerds. So folks, here's the cloud in a nutshell. The cloud means that you don't need a whacked out gizmo on your desk, all right? You need a simple gizmo and let all the really clever stuff happen somewhere else. In my example, I run some beat-up old hardware, a couple of computers on my desk here. If one of them breaks, I could care less. I go rummage around in my garbage pile and build myself another one. I don't have any data that I care about here in the house. Everything is online. You're probably like that as well, except you don't realize it. If you use webmail like Yahoo or Google's Gmail, it's in the cloud. You can access it from any computer. If the computer you're using breaks, you haven't lost anything. As far as documents go, sure. Temporarily, I have documents on my local machines, but guess what? As soon as I'm done with them, which is generally a couple of hours, hey, they're gone. They're in the cloud. Cloud is good. Cloud is where everyone needs to be. Do you think I'm hitting it on the nail there, Charlie?
Well, I think you've made some excellent points about, certainly services like, what's called VPS or virtual private servers, things like that, where you have to worry about your data. I think that's an important point. I tend to think of the cloud more in terms of never, ever again being asked if I have the right driver, which I consider to be almost a pornographic statement. I don't care about drivers. It is not part of my life. It's not any kind of special knowledge that would tend to make anybody think you're smart or whatever. It's just absolutely poor technology. And so the cloud, I think, is going to take all that stuff behind the curtain. I like to use the term, cloud computing is like Disneyland for the computer. It is invisible technology. Growing up in Walt's hometown, people tend to think that Walt's greatest contribution to mankind was the storyboard, the animated cartoon and whatnot. I tend to believe that Walt's genius lied in his respect for the end user experience. Anybody that's ever been to Disneyland knows that you have this amazing experience above the street. You never see any technology. It's hidden away. And I believe that, that is the cloud. You have the heavy lifting that's happening behind the scene or under the street, and you're about the task then above the street rather than tending to the technology, which I choose not to do with the rest of my adult life. So I think cloud is, a better user experience. I think people tend to go too far a little bit when they start thinking about how thin the clients are going to be. And I think you need thin clients, but I think they can't be that anorexic. They can't be stupid, given some of the things that the applications that are envisioned. And more importantly, when you start talking about remote desktops, now you're looking at a hybrid client cloud model, which I think is something I'm going to go into some more detail on in my upcoming article. But it's an amazing time in technology because the user is colliding with technology, like when worlds collide, and the cloud is the result. And so I think it's just a better, it's an amazing opportunity for partners, innovators, purveyors, whatever, to step up and deliver something amazing for the end user. And I think that's the economic opportunity that sits out there.
In fact, as I understand it, Charlie, you were intrinsic in creating your own cloud, the Charlie Cloud. Actually, I believe the technical term is the Fusion Render Cloud. Tell us a little bit about that project.
Absolutely. That project is continuing. We have a standard product now that's actually being built by an amazing company called Supermicro. And it's an AMD 24-core box in a 1U, which is, for your listeners, that's almost blade-like board that houses two GPUs as well. And so that's something you can buy today. And it's being used, currently. We're looking at, some of the projects I can talk about. Some I cannot go into,
right.
into
but,
that.
Before you move on, okay? So it's blade type technology. In simplistic terms, does that mean you can stick them in a rack and you need more power? You just add more of these things.
Yes. What it does, what this thing does, is it allows multiple users to. The particular application is remote gaming. and allows multiple users to log on to one of these things, one Fusion Render node. And you can, with one Fusion Render node, you can set up a small cloud. And of course, with ganging up multiple Fusion Render nodes, you can support more users. And which is the most fundamental part of cloud economics, is lowering the average power per user, consumed power per user. And that's the idea. That's why scaling is so important. And but anyway, so that is a project. That project, I would say, was almost a Galapagos-like experience for me. Being thrown into the details on that whole thing. And so that this upcoming article, I think you'll get a few more details than what I'll go into and bore the poor people listening today.
I like it. Now, you use the term render, so I'm, and you've also mentioned gaming, so I'm presuming that what we're talking about here is taking a lot of the grunt work of rendering graphics so that what the end user is seeing is the end result, rather than having to rely on their own computing power to do the rendering. Am I close to the mark?
Well, to a certain extent, but mainly, doing what's called server-side rendering or remote rendering. What this allows you to do is to render the game in the cloud in some data center someplace and then serve it up to a very, very thin client, which could be a cell phone, it could be any kind of tablet, thin and light, iPad, whatever, notebook, desktop, and the benefit is, instead of spending hours loading up a game or authorizing a game, I do a web click and I'm playing. Again, you can see the change from tending to technology and nursing the stuff along to actually doing the one thing that's shown itself to be widely accepted, which is a web click, and you're running it in the browser. And so that particular technology, that Fusion Render, is using the CPU and GPU to accelerate that, make that real in the cloud, and to overcome some of the statistical behavior of the internet in terms of latency and whatnot, to deliver that up to the user as a, hey, I'm clicking, I clicked an icon, I'm playing this game. And that's one example of how server-side rendering is going to improve the user's experience. And this is why we did this. Gaming is HD. It's interactive. It's working in the web. And so, again, it was almost a Darwin sort of experience for me in terms of looking at the way this works.
You mentioned that you could talk about some projects but not others. Is there a particular favorite project that you could talk about?
Yes. The Fusion Render node is going to be used for a very high-end renderer for Robert. And it's this is something that will be undoubtedly used on some of his next feature films. But what it does is it's sort of a private cloud that's used in his company that allows the artist to render much, much faster and to deliver an artistic representation, full HD plate to him much faster than we're able to do now. And so that's a particular one that I'm very proud of that has come out of the Fusion Render Cloud project. So that's what's happening there.
Are people experimenting with multiple nodes?
Yes.
Would you be able to tell us the maximum size that you've seen operational, or would that be super secret?
Well, I don't want to. I can't give away partner plans. I just I'd like to do that. I could send you some schematics, maybe. No,
I mean, you got to understand.
Yeah.
This is my job.
Yeah, I know.
To interrogate you.
But But I would say this. You know, the next several months, you're going to see some pretty amazing things happen. And so I would stand by. I would, you know, rather than prognosticate, I would just wait to see what happens there.
I am looking forward to seeing how the Fusion Render Cloud, you know, does progress. It certainly is a very exciting concept.
Well, you know, I tell you what, Simon. People tend to focus on hardware. It's the touchy feely sort of thing. I think the thing to look at there is really the fusion of the CPU and GPU, because in the cloud, as we accelerate media with the GPU, those same algorithms come down and flow down to our fusion technology, and we're able to provide a unified programming model, because, you know, all this hardware and all these devices out there, somebody has to write the software for these things. And the most beautiful part about what I think we're doing, one of the things is providing this unification of the programming model, accelerating media with the GPU, leveraging the existing code base, the thousands of man years of investment, and allowing the cloud architects to focus on the hybrid model between the cloud and the client. And that is what I think the work on the Fusion Render node has helped drive. That's what I'm most proud of. Yes, we're doing clouds, people are ganging up nodes, but the algorithms and the programming model itself is what's really sort of distilling out of this thing. And as it sits on our Fusion technology, this is the future of the cloud, because now people can program, they can innovate, they can leverage existing code. You know, you can fly to the moon if you have the money and time. It's been done. But why not leverage, you know, some of the best of the past and carry that forward and evolve that? And I think, again, it's an interesting look at the way AMD does business. We are looking at our partners' investment. We are looking at our technology, and we're looking at where things are going, and we're laying our marketing right down the middle and our architecture right down the middle of that. But ultimately, we are striving to provide a better user experience. And otherwise, we might as well go to work at a carnival or something, you know, and guess weight or whatever. But if we're going to do this, let's do it right. Let's listen, you know, let's grow some ears and listen to what these people who use the technology want, and then let's architect, and that's kind of where we're at. But I wouldn't focus on hardware. I would focus on the thought process and the programming that sits on the hardware. And if that's not there, then you don't have a cloud, you have smoke.
Right. And you've mentioned a couple of times since we've been on air that you are working on a new article. And I'm wondering if you could maybe share a little bit about the subject matter.
Absolutely. The title of the article is called The Invasion of the Client Snatchers. Here again, another homage to very low-budget science fiction films. But The Invasion of the Client Snatchers is a discussion, again, sort of from my Galapagos-like experience on the Fusion Render node, the Fusion Render Cloud, on looking and being immersed in what the cloud is going to do and what the business models, and I think I even identify a new cloud business religion in this article. And the interesting thing about this particular article, and maybe the only reason people actually open it up, is because it's illustrated by the head pre-visualization artist that did both Predators and Machete, as well as Sin City. This gentleman's name, he works for Robert Rodriguez, his name is Alex Toder. And so he did all the art in this particular article. So that's due to come out here probably within the next couple of weeks. But anyway, it's a look. It's almost what I would call like a public service announcement for people that are involved in the cloud. It's not another treatise on cloud computing. You know, I mean, like we need another one of those. This is more of like, you know, these guys wash up on this island, you know, and you know, it's very anecdotal, and but they catalog myself and my co-author catalog a new business religion. We look at some key technologies, and we add some terms to the current lexicon. So it's a again, it's a hybrid article of very Boswell sort of you know, entertainment meets meets technology meets Spike Jones and who's the other guy? Ed Wood, you know. But anyway, you guys be the judge.
I'm looking forward to it. I will share this with our readers or listeners, rather. I have seen bits and pieces, haven't seen the finished product, and it does indeed make for some very thought-provoking reading. You should be very happy with yourself with this article, Charlie.
Well, we'll see. You know, it's like with any movie release. You know, you may have your own parking space on Friday, and then when the Saturday numbers comes in, you know, your name may have been, you know, whited out.
our time, alas, is at an end for this program, anyway. Charlie, I really want to thank you, and I'm wondering if you have any, you know, final comments for us.
Well, yeah, I would just like to, you know, challenge your listeners to, again, do an evaluation of how much time you spend tending the technology versus the task, and then with regard to just your own personal lives, I can just leave you with this.
Review and receive setup instructions.
Okay, Charlie and I were playing this before we went on air. Can you give us the it didn't come across that great, but this was what happened when you turned your phone on this morning, I understand.
Yes, it basically said, you know, press setup, you know, to review or press start to review setup instructions. Anyway. Technology. What can I say?
Yeah, don't you just hate it? Yeah, I'm looking around my desks at the moment, and what's just caught my eye is a large Dell laptop that is currently broken, and it suddenly brought back your comment about drivers and how they're pornographic. I ended up having to reload the operating system, which happened to be Vista, but really doesn't matter. And it did an excellent job of reloading every driver except the one I really needed, which was for the internet access. Hate it.
Ah, yes. Just pull the plug.
Oh, exactly. I'm glad it's not mine. And I can't wait to give it back to the owner. But I mean, after a couple of hours of messing around with computers and you know, thumb drives and other exotic devices, I did finally get it back online. What a waste of time and effort. Charlie, I really want to thank you for taking time out to talk with us today, and I'm sure that we will be talking again in the future.
Sounds great. I appreciate the opportunity, and thanks for listening.
Well, thank you for joining us. This is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, wishing everyone a great Saturday, and just a reminder, we will be back on the air tomorrow with our update on the missing persons cases that we're following. Till then, goodbye.